Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph, four lines down. Gufa, we're going back to a statement of Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, and he's going to be the main player here in a number of memorot that we're going to have. This is the first of a series that statements that he's going to make. First of which is Chelev Shabasar Chofeoto Mutar. That's what we noted yesterday, that if you have Chelev, you have fats that are surrounded by flesh, that is Mutar. So that statement tries to identify when you have around the edges of the animal fats, which fats are considered to be fats that are chelev, and which fats are considered to be shuman. So one of the identifying factors over here is if it is trapped between basar, then it's usually shuman. If it is exposed, then it's considered to be chelev. Mar Sazini, is that really true? We have another statement, number two, Ba'amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel. Haitarba de tute matne asir. That fat which is below the loins is asur. The response to that is Amar Abaye behema bechaya. An animal when it's alive, fruke mifrika. It throws it off or opens it up. So let's discuss where the fats of the motne are. Rashi's shita is, if you look at a cross section of the animal from behind, the animal's spinal column is coming through on the top. In that spinal column, you have towards the end vertebrae. They get smaller and smaller, and the ribs or the wings that come off of them also are getting smaller. As you get towards the back of the animal, over there is flesh that is right below those vertebrae or those small ribs. And next to that flesh, on the right and left side, is a section of fat that Rashi calls the tarba fat. The tute matne, that is below the loins. For Rashi, it's these two pieces at the side. Before it descends, because yesterday as we discussed, when that fat descends, it starts to move between this thin basar adom, he calls it, this thin red meat. That already is between basar, and that is not asur. So it's only the sections at the top left and the top right that have this fat that are problematic. Now Rashi describes what abaye means, is that when the animal walks, its hips shift. Because as it is moving back and forth, as it moves its legs, it shifts or moves the hips up and down. By doing such, you have a pull on the side that is extended so that the ksalim or the flank of the animal gets pulled down and the top or the flesh at top is pulled towards the other side. By doing such, it exposes that area of fat now that does not sit below the flesh of the loins, but rather is now pushed out to the side. So then the butcher goes in there and cuts it up. It looks like it's between the basar, but when the animal was alive, as it walked, it shifted its loins, and in shifting its loins, that causes a pull of the basar away from the flank, meat of the loin away from the flank of the animal, and that exposes that fat that is towards the top. And that's why it's considered to be fat that is asur. That's Rashi's view. There are numerous other views amongst the Rishonim. So we'll just discuss a couple of them. The Shita Tarif, the Rif who says it's some strip of white, there are those that make it synonymous with that of Rashi. But there's also the view of the Rif according to the Beit Yosef. The Rif according to the Beit Yosef says something along the lines of what you are describing, which is that along the spinal column, there is flesh that's inside of the bones of the spinal column called the cinta. I think you can actually order it in a restaurant today. On that cinta above it is fat. And that fat sits above the basar, up against the skin of the animal that sits all above there. So that's what the Beit Yosef claims is the chelev that sits between, he calls it between basar ha'itzah, leben ha-shuman kasher shetachat or hagav. So there's shuman all the way at the top that is kasher. Below that sits this chelev that's above the flesh of the sinta or the kushlitz, which are the words that are used here. That is the basar that sits above the vertebrae, above the ribs, towards the hind of the animal. So from the cross section, again, if you have the Rashi's view, which is that it's these fats on the side that are right next to the loin basar, which is underneath the vertebrae. The Beit Yosef on the other hand is saying there's flesh above the vertebrae. That flesh is called the sinta, the kushlitz. Right above that is a layer of chelev that is considered to be this chelev that we're discussing here. There's the Shita of the Rif, according to the Yamshel Shlomo, and according to the Mordechai, which is speaking about Chelev all the way towards the back of the tail, part past the sacrum, that there's a section of fat over there that is considered to be this Chelev. And the Rambam speaks about it being towards the area of the hip joint, or sitting on the pelvis, the hip bone of the animal, right towards the back there, there's a section of fat. So that's the Rambam Shita. You have a number of Shita. The Rambam says that it's all the way down the side of the flank, which is much harder to understand, as many point out, because that area of fat is between the basar, and that we consider to be fine. But he describes it lower down on the flank. But the other Shito describe it towards the top hind of the animal. Just a question of where it is in relationship to the other fats. There are other fats that are surim, other fats that are mutarim, and the Rif makes a note of the fact that there's just a thin layer that sits between the fats that are kshirim and the fats that are asurim. Here other Rishonim try to identify which is the fat that the Rif was speaking about. So those are two statements that we have from Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yudah, Amar Shmuel. And now we say, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ana lav tabchana, I'm not a butcher, lav bar tabchana, I'm not the son of a butcher. The play on the Gemara in other places says that I'm not a Navi, I'm not a Ben Navi. A way to say that that's not my profession, but Nehirna, Dahachi Abba Amri Beit Midrasha. But I am clear about what they say in the Beit Midrash. I mean, obviously it's a Talmud Chacham, not a butcher. Beima Bechayeha, an animal during its lifetime, Fruke Mifrika, does shift its loins, and that causes exposure of those fats during the lifetime of the animal, and that's what we described before in the name of Abaye. Now we have a third statement from Rabbi Abba. I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Yudah Mashmuel. Chelev Sha'al Ha Masas or Ala Hemseis, depends which pronunciation, we've discussed this before. Ubeita Kosot. So you have Chelev that's on top of the Omasum, on top of the reticulum. Asurim, that fat is asur. Banush karet, and that is something that you would get karet. Vizeu chelev shal hakerev, that is the chelev al hakerev that is described by the Torah. One of the pieces of fat that have to go on the mizbeach is chelev shal hakerev. Those are the fats that sit on the kerev, which is the innards, but it's really the digestive system, which includes all the stomachs. That's the fat that we're discussing over here, the chelev shal hakerev. This is a section of it, or is a part of it. The Rashi over here, in describing that, he says, "Sofa keref, at the end of the keref, velo zehu ikar achelev mechaset keref." This is not the primary fat that surround the keref. You have a big, what we call it, sack of fat that holds all of the stomachs, all of the innards of the animal. That's the main chelev mechaset keref, shekorim tailo. That's the fats that are clearly asur. That's something that we're not discussing here. He doesn't need to tell you that. That's something that's well known and it's easily identifiable. Shehu totav krum v'niklav. It has all the qualifications for chelev, which we've discussed previously, that it sits, it peels away, and that it has a thin film on it. And we discussed all the different shita back earlier in the Masechta. But we're talking about the fats that are directly on the hemseis and the beit hakosot that are attached to the kerev, but are not part of that sack or the kerev around it. So that's what Rashi just helps us to identify or to locate that fat, because otherwise he says it's too obvious. You don't need Rabbi Abba to tell you that the chelev shel hakerev, that sack of fat that surrounds the kirbayim, that's asur. That's pure chelev. That's something that's well understood and well known, because it's easily identifiable. It's clearly chelev. What we're discussing here is there's another layer of fat that sits directly on the hemseis and the beit hakosot. That's what Rabbi Abba is speaking about, and that's what's asur over here. Now we have a fourth memra from Rabbi Abba. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Haitarba deklibusuta. The fats that are found on the sacrum, or the tailbone, so those fats are asur, vanush karet. And you're chayav karet for eating them. Vizeu chelev sha'alak salim. And that's a part of the chelev that is on the salim. And as Rashi describes it, there's a small bone, your tailbone, your sacrum. It sits right above the pelvis or the hip bone, and it's attached to the vertebrae that go through to the tail. And over there, there's chelev that sits right below the loins, which are called the lumbil. That's the same lumbil that Rashi noted before, that loin flesh. That's where this fat is found. your chayav karet for that fat, because it's part of, or it's attached to, the chaylev she'alak salim, the fat that's sitting on the loins, on the side, that which we described before. This is an extension or connected to that fat, and therefore it's also asur. Now we have a fifth statement from Rabbi Abba. I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Yudah Meshmuel. Chutin shebiyad asurim. The veins that are found in the foreleg are problematic. When you cut off the foreleg, there are veins that come through the foreleg. Once you've separated it away from the shoulder scapula of the animal, that leg has these veins that go through it. Those are problematic. Amar Rav Safra, Moshe, mi amar rachmano, lo tichul bisra. So Moshe, you could look at it both in a pejorative way or in a positive way. Rashi reads it, Moshe, Talmud Chochom. So he's just saying to him, you wise one, or sort of Shas brings from Rashi and other places in Shas, which was, B'yakra de Moshe kamishtabo, by the name of Moshe, meaning that he's taking it in Shavuah, but he's expressing Tmiyah. He's perplexed. He's wondering about what he says. Did the Torah say you can't eat meat? This is the foreleg, is basar over there. Why can't I eat the basar over there? What are you speaking about over here that you have to take these chutin out? So Amarova, Moshe, the response to mankind, Moshe, mi amar rachmana achol domo. He says, who says that you're allowed to eat blood? There's two different issues. One is basar, which you're allowed to eat. The chutin problem is not because of the basar there. The problem is not because of chaylev. The problem is because of the dam, the blood that's there. These veins contain too much blood, and you need to drain that blood before you eat the foreleg. Chatche, you cut it. Umalche, and then you salt it. Afilu de deira nami shapir dami. And then you can put it into a pot. Meaning that once you've done the cutting, exposing those veins, putting salt on it, it will drain the blood out. Once that blood is drained, you can throw it into a pot, and you don't have to worry about the blood circulating around inside of the meat or being poured into the pot. We're going to see alternatives for getting rid of blood, which don't allow you sometimes to put it directly into a pot. When the Gemara says you can put it into a deira, means all the blood is gone. It's totally fine to cook this meat. Amar Yehudah Amar Shmuel. Reish, mayo. When it comes to the beginning of the intestines, ba'amto, for the first ama, ba'i greiro, you need to scrape it off. Zeu chelev shaladakin. This is the chelev that is on the intestines. So this is chelev that is asur. You need to take off the first ama's worth. So at the end of the stomach of the animal, it starts to narrow down. When it narrows down, it turns into the intestine. At that point where it narrows down, for the first ama of the small intestine, that would be what would be considered to be the chelev shaladakim that you need to remove. There are alternate views. Again, we discussed this earlier in the Masechta back in Elul Trefot, because over there, there was a machloket Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva that argued about what exactly the chelev shaladakim was. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, chutin shebaoketz asurim. The chutin, again, veins that are found inside of the oketz are problematic. Rashi over here describes, and the Gemara is going to give some indication of this, these are five chutin that are in the kaplay, and Rashi says flunksha, or the other way to say that is the flank, or flunk it. It means the flank of the animal, that's where it's found, and oketz, Rashi says, is the henka. Henka is the pelvic bone that Rashi keeps describing that has the kuliyot, where the top bone of the animal connects in, which is where the hip joint is. So the henka contains the hip joint. That's what he classifies as the oketz. And he says that these blood vessels go from the spinal column into the flank of the animal. Chamisha chute itbei bekafla. There are five of these veins that go through the flank. Tlata miyamina. There are three to the right side. Betarte mismola. And two to the left side. Tlata mefatzle the tray. The three that come out of the right side subdivide into two, and tray, two on the left side, meflatzle the tlata tlata. They break up into three, meaning that they break up into smaller veins that extend from them. So they branch off, they tree off. So the ones on the right that are more numerous, they only branch into twos, whereas the ones on the left, there are fewer of them, there's two of them, but they branch off into threes instead of twos. In that basis, there's six on each side. Why does it matter? Nafkamina, de'ishaliflu adichamime. If you pull them out when the animal is still warm, mishtalfe, they just pull out. So if you start at the top and you pull the vein, it's not only going to pull the main vein, it's going to pull all those smaller capillaries, that the smaller veins that extend out of it, everything will pull out easily. But once it is colder or the meat is constricted, then it's very hard to get it out. Even when you pull the main vein, it's going to tear away from the other pieces. Below, by chatute batrayu. Then you got to dig in and dig them out. You got to carve them out because they don't pull out easily. How do you know what you're looking for? These are the numbers that they're giving you to tell you how many you need to find or how many you need to dig after to know that you've completed that job. Tosfot over here says this need for chatita is only a din derabanan. He says, first of all, because chelav amarachamana below chutin. The Torah says that chelav is asur, not these chutin. That's number one, something we mentioned before. But number two is alak salim below tochak salim. It also only says that which is on the loins is asur, not that which is embedded in the loins is asur. For both of those reasons, these chutin are not asurim midoraita. Omikol makom, you have to take them out midorabanan, and it's not like the other fats of the sides of the flank of the animal, where we say when you have basar on both sides, that chalev is really shuman and is totally mutar. Here over here, we establish that it's asur midorabanan for one of two reasons. Either because when the animal walks, these chutin get pulled up and exposed, or even without the movement of the loins and the movement of the animal, these types of chutin are exposed, and given that exposure, they are problematic. That's why the Baitos would say, midrabanan, you need to remove these, because they are too similar to the chelev, and even though, again, mi'ikar adim, midoraita, they would have been excluded. Nevertheless, we have to do chatita and remove them, midrabanan. There are five chutim that we have discussed. Three of them are because of fats. Betrayin mishum damo. And two of them have to do with blood. Ditachle, the chutim of the spleen. Udikafle, those of the loins. Udikulita, and those of the kidneys. Mishum tarba, are problems of fat. Diyada, udiloa, those that we discussed with the forearm and on the cheeks, mishum dam, a problem of dam. And Rashi points out that these veins that we're speaking about here in the jaw, the cheeks, are not the main veins of the neck. He says, because these are chutim dakim. These are very thin chutim, and therefore it's not dealing with the mizrake atzavar. Not dealing with the main arteries of the neck, which we've already discussed earlier, that you need to cut them and you need to drain them. That's not the discussion over here. The discussion over here is about the smaller veins that need to be removed. And over here we're speaking about the veins that are in the cheek and in the jaw area that they need to be pulled out. The Rosh also says that when we're talking about these veins in the cheek and in the jaw, the veins in the tongue, hey michlau daloa, they are subsumed in the cheeks and the jaw, because in the matnot kihuna, when we give the lechayim to the Kohen, the Lechayim means the jaw, the cheeks, and the Lashon, and the tongue along with it. So if that's the definition over there, that should be the definition over here as well. And therefore you need to pull out those two veins that are in the tongue, along with the veins that are in the cheek or in the jaw of the animal.
The Mayinafkamina, what does that make a difference? Hani demishum dama, those that are a problem because of blood, imit chatech luchu, if you just slice them, umalaklu, and then you salt them, shapir dami, then you've dealt with the problem. So when it comes to the chutim of the forearm and the chutim of the cheek, those, if you simply remove them, you'll be fine. If you don't remove them, all you have to do is slice across there. Once you've sliced across and salted it, you can drain the blood by salting it, and then you've solved the problem. Hanach, when it comes to the other chutim, which are a problem of tarba, a problem of fat, late lahu takanto. Then there is no cure or no fix for them. So then, if that is the case, then the translation of chutin might be slightly different. The translation in general of chutin is considered to be vein, and they're usually an indication of a blood problem. On the other hand, here we're suggesting that the chutin are not necessarily veins, but a fat problem. So you can interpret that in one of two ways. Either the chutin are a description of the fat, meaning these streaks of fat that are there, or that the chutin, the veins, are an indication of where the fat is. And so that it's still the same translation of a vein, it just means that this is where the fat is. If you see the veins there, you know that that's where the fat is. Or if you're chasing the fat, follow the veins and you'll see the fat. So there's different ways you have to formulate it in order to understand why the same word is being used both for the fat and for the blood. Amar Rav Kana, Beitema Rav Yehuda, Chamsha Karme Havu. There are five membranes or five films. Talata Mishum Darba. Three of them are a problem for fat. Betray Mishum Damo. And two of them are a problem of blood drainage. The Tachle, those of the spleen. The Kafle, those of the loins. Or the Kulita of the kidneys, Mishum Tarba. They're problematic because of fats. The Bei, or the Mokra, from the testicles and from the brain, Mishum Damo, is because they trap the blood inside. So certain films or membranes are considered to be chelev, and that's why you need to remove them. That's what we saw here, that by the spleen, by the loins, and by the kidneys, you need to remove those films because they're a problem of fat. The testicles and the brain are keeping blood inside of them. If you don't release them, then the blood's going to stay in there and cause you a problem. So you need to remove the membrane, not because there's anything inherently wrong with the membrane, but that's what allows for the drainage of the blood from those areas. If you look at the loins, until now we discussed the fats that were up at the top of the loins, which was the chelev haksalim. There's an additional part of the chelev haksalim, which we mentioned yesterday and we discussed before, which is that on the internal part of the loins, there's a thin film that goes all the way on the inside of the loins. Once all the basar is done, meaning that you've gone through all of the flesh, and now you're in the internal section of the loins where you're already coming into the organs, around the organs is a thin film that goes around. That is the chelev hakrum of the kesalim. And that's what we're referencing to over here, is that thin film that goes around on the internal side. The questions about the chelev on the outside and at the bottom are what we discussed yesterday. That all sits between flesh, and therefore it's not a problem. Rashi discussed yesterday the thin piece of flesh at the bottom, whether that protects the chelev at the bottom or not. I mean, at the underbelly, does it protect it? And then we have this internal film, which is clearly chelev. And then there's an additional chelev haksalim, which is somewhere up towards the top of the back of the animal. And we discussed Rashi's shita as to where it is in the top right and left, right next to the vertebrae. And the other shitot of the Rishonim, including the Rif, that it's way on top of the vertebrae, towards the top of the hind of the animal. And that's a membrane that is a problem of fat. You have a similar thing with regards to the kidneys, which is the kidney has an internal section where the kidney sits. And then there's a layer of fat that sits around the kidneys. The kidneys are completely covered in fat. That chelev sh'ala klayot, that chelev on the klayot is problematic. Not only is it problematic, but there's also a membrane that goes around that fat that's on the kulia. That membrane on the outside is problematic. That is as far as loins and the kidney are concerned. That of the spleen we're going to discuss in a minute because the tachle has a unique side to it. There's the other films that we spoke about, which was the film of the testicle. Again, the testicle has two layers or two membranes on it. If you remember earlier in Elu Trefot, they discussed that the testicle was similar to the brain, which is that the brain and the testicle both had double membranes on them. Truth is that the brain actually has three layers, but one is very thin, and they probably missed it when they were pulling it out. But there's a double layer of membranes. And the problem is because if you don't remove the membrane, you're not going to drain the blood out of it. We hear the Baroshia of a Kakalifle Tachlo, the Levi braid, Rav Huna Bar Chiya. He was peeling away the fats that were on top of the spleen, because that's what we just said here. You have to peel away the fats that are on the spleen. Rav Huna Yehuda Bar Yoshia was taking away the fats for Levi. He would only cut off towards the top part of it. So ga'im in general means that you slice it away. Milai means towards the top of it. Amrlei chut beit fei, descend more. Go deeper into it. Levi says to Rabbi Yehuda Bar Oshia, who's preparing for him, go deeper. Ata avua, ashkeche. And then Levi's father, who's Rav Huna Bar Chiya, comes and says, Amrlei hachi amar avua dimech, mishum rav. This is what your eternal grandfather said. Umano, and who's his maternal grandfather, is Ramirmiya Barabu, who says the name of Rab. Lo asra Torah, elasha dad bilvat. The Torah only asked that which was on the dad. Now dad in the Gemara and in general means a nipple. Obviously in the spleen, we're not speaking about the nipple, we're speaking about the area that attaches it to the other organs. So that tubing, or where you come to the point in the tchol, which is the entrance and exit of the liquids that flow in and out of the spleen, that area is called the dad. So what he says is that only the area next to the dad, or the fats next to the dad, are what need to be removed. Things that are further away don't need to be removed. So just the part that's closer to the attached point is problematic, which is that only in the thicker part of the spleen, in that area, is the fats problematic. As you move further down the spleen, that's not problematic. Ini, is that really true? So his son responds to him and says, wait a minute, we have a bright of Rav Umnuna that says otherwise. V'amar Rav Umnuna, tana krum shalat chol asur. The fats that are on the spleen are problematic. Vein chayavin alav, and you're not chayav karet for it. Hechidami. How do we reconcile this? Ilei mashallah dad, if you're speaking about the fats that are on the area which is attached to the entrance to the spleen, then am I in chayivin alav? Why aren't you chayav on it? Chiyuv karet. That's the real tarba that you need to get off. Ela dekule. It must be the remainder of it, meaning that the section that's towards the bottom. Samalei itanya tanya. If it's a brayta, it's a brayta. Meaning that he has a mesorah from Yirmiyahu Abba Abba in the name of Rav, that those fats are not problematic. You don't have to go deeper. On the other hand, we have this alternate mesorah from Rav Amnuna that seems to say that you have to take off all the fats. And he says, you're not chayav, but you got to take it off. Now, if he's speaking about the same fats that Rav Yirmiyahu Abba was speaking about, that Rav Huna Bar Chiya was quoting, then you would be chayav karet for it. So clearly they're not speaking about the same fats, which means that they have to take off additional fats from the spleen, and that would go against what Rav Huna Bar Chiya was suggesting. In the end, he throws up his arms and says, Itanya, Tanya, if you have a braita, can't argue with the braita, but at least in reconciling it, we know that the part that Rav Huna Bar Chiya and Rav Yirmiyahu Abba are speaking about is the part that you're chayav karet for. The remainder is asur, but you're not chayav karet, which means that it's an Isur derabanan to remove the remaining fats. Gufa, Amar Rav Amnuna. Now, again, we're going to discuss this braita that was quoted by Levi. Tano, krum shal atchul asur, vein chayavin alav. Krum shal gabe kulya, asur, vein chayavin alav. There's a membrane or fat layer that is on the spleen that you are asur, but you don't get karet for. And similarly, on the kidney, there's this layer of fat that's a asur, but you don't get karet for it. V'atanya, don't we have alternate brayto that say chayavin alav, that you are chayav karet? So tchol atchol lo kasha. The spleen issues is not a kasha. Ha keneged adad, ha shelo keneged adad. That's what we just dealt with. The stuff that's up towards the entranceway into the spleen, or the thicker part of the spleen, that is asur and chayavin karet. The stuff that extends further down the spleen is asur, but ain't chayavin alav karet. Kulya kulya nami lokasha. The kidney is also not a problem. Habilo habitato is what you asked about before, that there are two membranes around the kidney. The outer membrane around the fats that surround the kidney, that's asur v'chayavin alav karet. The inner membrane, which is surrounds the kidney itself, between the fats and the kidney, that is a sur, but not chayav karet on it. Bay chashilta. Chashilta means that they were detached, or they are somehow separated away from the body, but as the Rashi notes over here, that they are still urim begufo. They're still attached to the body of the animal, but there's some sort of detachment or severing that has taken place. So they're hanging off, but they're not completely severed. So the question is, what's the status of these testicles? Rav Ami v'Ravasi, we have a machloket. Chad asar v'chad shari. One says it's asur, one says it is mutar. Manda asar, the one who says it's asur, midaloka baryan. Because they never regenerate, they never recover from this injury. Hane, Eber Minachai Ninu. Therefore, they take on a status of Eber Minachai. The animal is still alive. It's now severed. So if they do not recover from this, they do not regenerate,
then that's an indication that it's already severed from the animal. If it's severed from the animal, that's Eber Min HaChai. And that's why you can't eat it. Dosfot over here says that it's not really Eber Min HaChai, because it's like an Eber HaMedudal, which has a Din D'Oraita, is not considered to be Eber Min HaChai. Nevertheless, it's Mitzvah Prosh, which means that it's a Din D'Rabbanon of Eber Min HaChai. So even according to one who says it's a Sur, it's a Sur Mid Rabbanan and not a Sur Mid D'Oraita. Man D'Shori, the one who says it's Mutar, it's Golo Kam Misarchan, because they do not go bad. They do not rot or decay. Hani Chiyuta Ipu. That shows you that the main body of the animal is still providing, nurturing, or sustaining the testicle, because otherwise it would go bad, it would rot, because it's not attached in a way that would provide it a life force connection to the animal. Vidach. So the other one, the one who says it's a sur, hai deloka masarchan, the reason that it doesn't go bad, it doesn't decay, is aloka shalit bahu avira, because it's not exposed to the elements or to the air around it. I mean that it's still encapsulated, and that's why the testicles don't go bad, is because they are covered. You need to be exposed to the bacteria in order to allow them to rot. And that's not happening over here. So it's not because there's anything being provided by the animal that keeps it alive. It's self-sustaining. Not that it's going to grow, not it's going to get better, but simply that it is protected from the elements. Beidach, haidelo baryon. So according to one who says it's mutar, how come they do not recover, they do not regenerate? Kichishutahu denakatahu. That's a weakness in the animal or in this aver that's causing the problem. So the lack of regeneration is not because it's not still attached or being provided or sustained, nurtured by the animal. It's simply that there's not enough either strength in the animal or in the testicle now to recover from the injury. But that doesn't mean it's been severed from the animal. It's still attached and it's still considered to be good and it'd be kosher to eat. Amar lei Rav Yochanan Rav Shemin bar Abba. Hane beye chashilta sharyon. So he paskins that they are mutar. Va'at lo techo. And you may not eat them. Mishom al tidosh torati mecha. Because of the principle that you have to follow the minog of your place. So Rav Yochanan, who's in Eretz Yisrael, says the minog in Eretz Yisrael is that we eat them. But you, Rav Shemin bar Abba, as Rashi says, you came from Bavel. And in Bavel, sham noegim bo isura. Over there, there is an isur. Because the machloket is between Ravami and Ravasi, who are Bnei Bavel. And since we don't have a conclusion to that, that means that the minog is to be oser, because we don't know whether it's mutar or asur. But that's for you, Bnei Bavel. So the halacha I'm telling you is mutar. That's where in Eretz Yisrael now, I'm telling you that's halacha. You came from Bavel, you have to worry about that machloket Ravami and Ravasi, and therefore you have to abide by that minog to make it asur not to eat it. The Tosfot over here tries to discuss what is exactly the issue for Rav Shemin bar Abba. He says, either you have to say that Rav Shemin bar Abba's intention was dato lachzor, he was going to go back to Bavel, and therefore, since he intended to go back to Bavel, he was still bound by the minhagim of Bavel. Or the other possibility is that at lo techo b'mkomo kamar. He says, you don't eat it, he means when you're in your place, in your hometown, when you're back in Bavel, you can't eat it, because over there they keep it asur. He wasn't speaking to him directly and saying, you can't eat it. He already had made aliyah. He lived in Eretz Yisrael now. And therefore, once you intend to leave the place that you originated from, we no longer say that you put on him chumer makom shiyatza misham. Because now he's taken up a new residence, and that's in Eretz Yisrael. Minhag Eretz Yisrael governed then for him. So given that, he wasn't asur in it. But he's saying, when you go visit back home, then you've got to worry about it being asur. Because over there, the minhag is that it is asur. Amar Mar by Rav Ashi. Hane beye de dia, the testicles of a kid, which obviously means a young goat, at lotin yomin sharyin below klipa. For the first 30 days of their life, you can eat them without peeling away the membrane. If we said before you have to peel away the membrane of the testicle to let the blood drain, that's only true when the blood is built up to a significant volume by which you need to release it. That doesn't happen until 30 days into the life of a animal. Mikan ve'elech, from there to forward, here azaron asurin, below azaron sharyon. From that time period on onwards, if this semen already has built up within the testicle, then they're problematic. Meaning that the semen is an indication of the fact that there's blood there. And if there's blood there, then it's already you need to peel away the membrane. Below azaron, if it doesn't have that buildup of semen yet, sharyon, then they still remain mutar.
So I mean, for the first 30 days, it's an objective heter. After that point, you need to test for whether it's already had the semen come into the testicle. So Minaya Dinan, how do we know where the animal is along the timeline? Most times we have no idea how old the animal is or whether the semen's come in there. Iitbehu shuraiki sumke. If you see streaks of red in it, a serin, then it's problematic. The streaks of red are probably an indication of veins and of blood that's built up in there. Letho shuraiki sumke. If it does not have those red streaks in it, sharyan, then it is mutar. Right now we have a new statement. Umtse beye umizrake. The beye we've already discussed, which are the testicles. Umtse in general is a term that the Gemara uses either for raw meat or roasted meat. Over here they're speaking about a raw meat that comes from a wound, an area where there was a buildup of blood before the animal died. The animal has a wound, not a trepha, but simply a wound in that area, and then you've taken off that raw meat from that area. Mizrake, we're going to see later, are the neck arteries. So all of these, pligi baravacha ravina, machloket ravacha and ravina, what you need to do. Kala Torah kula, ravina lakula, ravacha lakumra. Everywhere else where they argue, ravina is always the mandamar, that's the kula, and ravacha is always the kumra. And we always pass them like Ravina Lakula in all of their machlokot throughout Shas. Ravina is Lakula, and we pass them like Ravina. The Bar Me'an eats a lot, with the exception of these three items that we just mentioned. The Ravacha Lakula of Ravina Lakumra. Because over here, it's their positions are reversed. And over here, Ravacha goes Lakula. And Ravina is the more stringent opinion. The Hilchotak Ravacha Lakula. And the Loch is like Ravacha Lakula. So the basic principle is, we always pass them the Kula in a machloket Ravina and Ravacha. The only question is, who is the kula? So in most places, Ravina is the kula, and therefore we pass him like Ravina. These three instances, Ravacha happens to be the kula, and we pass him like Ravacha. Aumtza, the asmik, so this raw meat that has a wound that is associated with it, the asmik that is red, means sumak, it has this redness to it, which means that there's a buildup of blood inside of it. Chatcha umalcha. You cut it open and salt it. Then it's totally fine to boil it in a pot, put it into a stew, whatever you want to do with it. The blood is gone now. You don't have to worry about it. If you hang it up on a spit, doiv dama. So this is what otherwise is known as broiling. Broiling, according to the Gemara, is successful at drawing blood out of the organs or draining the blood from it. So it is another mechanism for moving blood. Now Rashi notes over here, even by roasting, there's a small amount of salting done. It's not the tremendous salting that we normally do for meat, but it's a small amount of salting, and then you put it on, roast it on the open flame. We know that this works because the Gemara uses this as the mechanism for draining blood from liver, heart, all these organs that have heavy buildups of blood in them that cannot be salted to remove the blood. Roasting is the mechanism. And here too, the Gemara says, if you just roast it on an open flame on a spit, doiv damo, it draws the blood out, and that's fine because then you'll drain the blood also. The Tosfos back on the Amud Aleph says that with regards to tzli, it's not enough just to roast it. You do need to slice it open. You need to cut it. And he says that where Rashi over there says that below chatcha umalcha, you put it on a spit without even cutting it or without salting it, except for that small amount of salt that normally is put on tzli, the Baal HaTosafot on the Amud Aleph, that you still need to cut it. And when Rashi says you don't need to do that, it means you don't need to do both of them. You don't need to do both salting and cutting, but you still need to do one of them. You either need to do salting or cutting in order for the tzli to be efficacious. And Tosafot wants to say that you do need to cut it in order for the tzli to work, because that's part of the Rabbeinu Tam's proof to the fact that just like people cook a liver in a k'teirah, they roast it, so too, it's mutar to cook it in a pot after heavy salting. As long as you leave it in the salting for 24 hours, because we have a view that meliach harayu kiroteach, that salting or what we call pickling over a 24-hour period is the equivalent of putting it into something hot. And it's roteach kitzli. And that means hot, like being on an open flame. So Rabbeinu Tam wants to suggest that you can do that instead of putting it on an open flame and broiling it in order to remove the dam. Now, that will only be true if you do need to slice it open, you need to cut it for its sleep, because otherwise there'd be no proof from here, because
the tzli would have been much more powerful in that way. That doesn't require chaticha. And that means you can't compare melicha to tzliya. On the other hand, if you have to cut it in order for the tzliya to work, then you could argue that melicha is on par with a tzliya. It's just like for melicha you need to cut, so too for tzliya. And then you could argue that if you bring up the melicha to the level of tzliya by leaving it in there, pickling it for 24 hours, that would be sufficient. So the Rabbeinu Tam's chiddush is premised on the fact that you need to cut it for tzli, and therefore the Baal Tos would say that the entire Gemara, both that which is on the Amud Aleph and the Amud Bet, is speaking about a case where you cut it before you put it on the roaster, even though from Rashi over here it sounds like you did not cut it. Baal Tos would say it means you didn't cut it and salt it, but you did one or the other, because you need to do something to help along the roasting process and allow for the blood to drain. A gumre, if you place it directly on the coals, then pligi ba rabacha ravina. This is the machloket of Ravacha and Ravina, meaning that everything until now is muskam, regular type of kasher. You cut it, you salt it heavily, that works. You broil it, that also works. Question is, if you put it directly on the coals, what's the status? Chadamar mishav shivele. One of them says that the coals draw the blood out. Chadamar mitzamtile. It constricts the item, meaning that the coals cause the flesh over here, or whatever the three items that we mentioned before, causes them to constrict. It's the equivalent of cauterizing it, which causes it to then constrict. And when it's constricting, it doesn't allow the blood to flow out. So, v'chein be'e, v'chein mizrake. So here we said it about the umtza, the din, or this machloket extends to the testicles, as well as to the mizrake, to the neck arteries. Reisha b'kibsa, otve abeta shkita, doiv damo. If you have the head of a sheep, you've shechted the animal, so the head is severed away from the animal. Now you need to drain the blood that's in the head. The head has a ton of blood in it, including the blood that's from the brain, and you need to drain the blood out. So if you place the head of the animal, abeta shchita, with the area that was severed down below, then there's no problem because the blood drains out from there. It's no question that that will be successful. Vishari, and therefore it's mutar. Atzdodin, if you lay the head on its side instead, then mikva kofi, it really coagulates inside of it. V'osur, meaning that the blood will pool instead of draining, and then it coagulates, and you're not going to be able to get the blood out. That is not a good way to deal with it, and it's going to become a sur. Otve anechire, if you sit it down on its nostrils, on its nose, which is another egress from the animal. The neck, obviously, is the biggest egress because you slice the neck, and that's the best way to do it. But if you turn it on its face and you face the nostrils downward, they are also a mechanism for drainage, and it will allow for the blood to drain out, but only if that's bei midei. If you insert something into the nostril to maintain the opening. The problem is that if over time you just leave it there, then it will slowly clog up or coagulate in the nostril when you're cooking it, and then you're not going to get the drainage that you want. So you need to stick some sort of, Rashi says maybe a little wood piece, something to maintain the flow or the opening of the nose to allow the blood to drain, and therefore, shari, it would be mutar. Ilo, if you do not keep that drainage line open through the nostril, asir, then it'd be problematic. Ikedamre, anechire vabite shkita doiv. So some suggest that if you have it on the beta shkita in the nostrils, it drains and it's mutar. Atzdodin, when you lay it on its side, idats vemide shari ilo asir. That when you lay it on its side, if you do nothing to maintain the drainage, then it will pull and coagulate and it won't drain. If you put something in there to allow it to drain, then it will successfully drain. Tosra brings over here a practice of people too. After the shechita, put the chicken into water. After that, they used to bury it in coals to take off the feathers from the chicken. He says, even though here by the rosh shekeves, by the head of the sheep, you can only do that if you have the nostrils facing down or the beit shechita facing down, that they're not makbid on with regards to the chicken. And he says, the reason is that the difference between a sheep and a chicken is that the sheep has tons of bones in the head, and they stop the blood from flowing outward. So unless you do it in a manner that allows the blood to drain, it's going to coagulate or get stuck inside of the head. On the other hand, by the tarnagolet, which doesn't have numerous amounts of bones or skeletal pieces in the head, then the fire or the flame is sufficient to draw the blood out. So that's how Tosafot justifies that practice. In addition, he brings from the Bahag that someone who is roasting a head needs to have the Beit HaShechita down below. But he says if you fail to do that, the only part of the head that is problematic is the brain. From the Bahag, you understand that the blood that they're speaking about that doesn't drain is associated with the Krum HaMoach, with the membrane that's around the brain that doesn't allow for the blood to drain unless it's fully open in a way that allows it to come out. But otherwise, if you don't do that, the remainder of the head is fine. It's just the brain that remains problematic. For that reason, he says, then when you go to the chicken, again, the chicken won't have that problem because the chicken's film or membrane over the brain is much thinner. We've already discussed this earlier. And therefore, you don't have the problem of the drainage. Or if you don't drain it up front, you're not going to have a problem with the brain because you can't get that blood out with regards to the Tarnet Goldet. And that's why it's mutar by the chicken and not mutar by the sheep. And he says, just as an aside, that gam chutim shebelechi, also those veins that are in the jaw, they are a surim if you didn't cut them up front because you need to get the dam out. If you don't cut them up front, they have a decent flow of blood and it will coagulate there. And you will not be able to get it out afterwards. So you need to cut that area, open it up, and drain it in order for you to get rid of the dam. Gemara says, they bach adds in the word gufa here. There are two gidim. Now we're all the way back to gidin asher. Here we took like almost a digression to deal with the fats and to deal with the veins and all the stuff that needs nikur, just like the gidin asher needs nikur. So too, these fats and these veins need nikur because of the problems of dam and chelev. Now we're back to the gidin themselves. We've quoted this twice before. Now this is the third time we're discussing this, which is, by the gidin asher, there are actually two sciatic nerves. And that is, hapnimi, samuch le'etzem. There's the internal one that runs along the bone. Asur, v'chayavin alav. That's the one that is the main sciatic nerve. That one is a sur, and you will be chayav for eating it. Chitzon, the outer one, samuch lebasar, sits in the flesh. It is a sur, ve'ein chayim min alav. That is problematic, but you're not chayav for it, meaning that's only an isur de rabbanan, not an isur de oraita. So the sciatic nerves that run through, they obviously come off the spinal column, they come through the vertebrae, and then they drop down into the leg. So the one that we're discussing that is problematic is the pnimi. The pnimi means that when you have the animal upright standing, it's on the one that faces towards the internal side or the other leg. That sciatic nerve runs along the etzem being the henka that Rashi always mentions, which is the pelvic bone where the joint of the hip goes. It runs along that bone. And then the other factor that is mentioned with regards to it is that it descends all the way down to the bottom of the leg. So those are the two features that are noted about the gidin asher, and that's the gidin apnimi, because it sits on the internal side of the pelvic bone, and therefore it's visible internally. If you cut the leg internally, you will see it on the internal side. On the other hand, there is a gid achitzon, which descends down, goes behind the kuliat, goes behind that, the top bone of the three bones of the leg. It goes behind the bone. It also does not run along that pelvic bone. It is already in the basar. It runs through the basar all the way down. It reaches down to the end of the shulk, but doesn't go as far down as the gida pnimi. So those are the two gidim that we've discussed before. Tosfot over here quotes Rashi as saying that it's called the gida pnimi because it's muv leharbe at samuch leetzem. It's deep down, very close to the bone. And the chitzon is because it's more on the surface and not embedded so deeply. Which again is the way that we've described over here. The only thing is that the Rashi that we have doesn't have that mentioned over here. But what Tosfot does note is that Rashi in the beginning of the Perek, when we first mentioned about the Gid HaPnimi and the Gid HaChitzon, over there he gave a different description, which is, Hashem Shu B'Tzad Pnimi Shal Yerech Klape Yerech Haberta. That's why it's called Pnimi. And the chitzon is because it's on the outer side of the leg. So Rashi over there, back in the beginning, says pnimi and chitzon have to do with where the gid faces in relationship to the leg of the animal. Pnimi means it's on the internal side of the leg. Chitzon means on the outer side of the leg. Over here, Tosfos quotes Rashi as saying that pnimi means up against the bone. It's not about whether it's facing in or out of the animal. Pnimi means depth. It's deep into the leg, and therefore it's right on the bone. Whereas chitzon means that it's more on the surface of the leg, not as deeply embedded. They both happen to be true, but Tosfos just points out that Rashi makes that distinction. It's helpful anyway, because it gives us the pnimi has both of those. It's both on the internal face of the leg, as well as the fact that it's deeply embedded, so it's right on the pelvic bone, as opposed to the chitzon, which again faces the outer side of the animal, side of the leg, as well as the fact that it runs through the basar and is not as closely tied or affiliated with the bones, especially the pelvic bone, until it gets much lower, where it wraps itself around the bottom of the kuliot and near the shok as well, where the leg narrows. Of course, it gets closer to the bone over there. Again, the pnimi one is the one that is the sciatic nerve mentioned by the Torah, which is asur and chayav. The other one is midrabanan asur, and you're going to have to take it out because it's asur, but you're not going to be chayav nevelav. Where it says, v'atanya, don't we have it right that it says pnimi samuch lebasar, that the internal one is in the flesh, and you told me what, the internal one was on the bone. So amrav acha, amrav kana, iklude miklid. As Rashi says over here, lashon mafteach. It is a key or an entrance way. That it goes through a potachat, it goes through a keyhole. So that's the fact that after it goes past the pelvic bone, it's already far away from the bone structure, and then it enters into the basar over here. Then it's in the flesh. So as opposed to the chitzon, which is the other way around, the chitzon starts out in the basar, meaning that's away from the pelvic bone, but then it comes behind the kuliyat, and that's when it gets closer to the bone, and then it wraps around again behind the shok. The gira pimi starts out riding right on top of the pelvic bone, but then after that it rides down the animal from the basar. And that's what it means over here, that it is iklude miklat, it's miftach, and nichnas betpotachat. It goes out of the bone and then goes through a keyhole, meaning that it enters into the basar, and then it stays in the basar all the way down until it reaches the lower bone, towards the end of the shok, then it comes back in towards the bone. Ba'atanyo, and then we have the same problem with the chitzon, which I already discussed for you, which is chitzon ha-samuch le'atzem, and then the outer one closer to the bone. Amar, Rabbi Yehuda, eched aparei tabche. That's in the area where the tabachim open it up. When you cut off the leg, or you sever the leg away from the body, then the chitzon over there, then it's exposed, because when you cut away the leg and pull it off, that is the chut that's going to be visible to you. When you pull it away, it looks like it's up against the bone. Because when you slice off the leg, that's going to be by the hip joint. So even though it's running through the basar, so when you sever the hip joint to pull away the leg from the animal, that's the chut that you're going to see, because it's right there. Itmar, tabach shenimtza chelev acharav. If a tabach hands you an animal that supposedly he took care of and kashered, and you find fats that are asurim in it, what is the din of such a tabach? Yudamar b'kisaora. If you find even a barley seed's worth of chelev left, he's in trouble. You have to have a kizayit worth of fat that's left over. Amra Papa v'lo plige. Papa says they don't argue. Kan la'al koto, kan la'avro. Depends on whether you're going to give him malkol for what he did, or you're going to depose him, meaning that he's going to lose his license to be a butcher. So to lose your license to be a butcher, all you need is to have a little kisaora there. You're already not trustworthy anymore, and therefore we're going to remove you, depose you from being a butcher, you're going to lose your license. If you leave over a kezayit, then already you are going to get malkolt, because you really are like a flagrant violator, and you're causing other people here now to have a kezayit worth of chelev, which is an isur doraita, that we're going to give you malkolt for. Amar marzutra, kisaora b'makom echad. We speak about a kisaora, that has to be in a single location. That's enough to have him be deposed. Kezayit, afilu bebet begimel mikamot. Kezayit doesn't need to be in a single location. It means if he leaves a kezayit worth around, then if he's on the aggregated basis, there's a kezayit worth, then he's going to get malkot. The hilchato, the loche is lalkoto be kezayit, lavro be kesora. Like Rav Papa's reconciliation here, that the loche is like that, that in order to remove him from being a butcher, then you just need a kesora's worth. In order to give him malkot, you need a kezayit worth. Now, this is really a lead-in to what the end of the Mishnah said, which was that the Mishnah says that the butchers are not believed with regards to the Gidin Asher and with regards to the fats of the animal, because they don't remove them. They'll tell you they remove them and they don't do it. That's Rabbi Meir's position. And then we have the descending opinion of the Chachamim that say, Ne'manim alav v'ala chelev. They are believed about the Gidin Asher and they're believed about the chelev. Now the Gemara discussing this says, Amar Rabbi Chir Ba'av, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chazru Lomar Ne'manim. They originally had the locha like Rabbi Meir. We did not believe the butchers. And then we started to believe the butchers. Amar Rav Nachman, Akshur Dare? People were becoming more ne'aman when we call Yiridat HaDorot. Now you're saying there's an Aliyat HaDorot. The old butchers, can't trust them. The new butchers, the new generations, we can trust the butchers. What type of scenario is this? Where it says, no. Mikaru Dabu Sari like Rabbi Meir. Originally, they paskin like Rabbi Meir. Therefore, lo habe mehemne. They didn't believe the butchers. The reason is that Rabbi Meir's requirement for removing the Gidin Asher is chatita. That you need to dig after it. You have to take it out all the way up and down. You have to pull the thing out and scrape after it. That's a lot of work. So when we paskin like Rabbi Meir, then we said the butchers are not ne'aman. It's just too much of a tircha for them. And they're just going to say they did it even though they didn't do it. But the soul savri Rabbi Yehuda. And then they paskin like Rabbi Yehuda just says, gomamoi mashofi. You just slice off the kaf over there and the git that comes away with the fats that come away in that area, that's all you need to remove. That's a much simpler procedure. Therefore, we believed them at that point because it wasn't a big undertaking to take care of it. So we assumed they did it. Tosva just qualifies us and says it's speaking about the git and not the chaylev when we said the switch between nemanim and ne'emanim because of the difficulty of chatita according to Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Yehuda. By chelev, you don't have that distinction because there's no machloket about taking out the fats. And at Tosafot already noted, we're not speaking about the fats of the git over here. We're speaking about the regular chelev, which are the different types of chelev that you need to remove, which are the chelev ala kerev, chelev ala ksalim, it's chelev ala klayot, and then the chelev ala ya, which we discussed in yesterday's daf, where the Tosafot is not certain as to whether that should be asur or not asur, but it really has a shame chelev. But all those chelev is what we're speaking about with regards to chelev. And the gid, we're speaking about the gid and the fats associated with the gid. According to Rabbi Meir, you have to take out the gid and the fats. According to Yehuda, especially according to Baal Tosafot, you just have to take out the gid, not the fat at all. But you take out, because of Mayrid Ayin, the fat that is on the shofi when you're gomamo, when you slice it off. Ike de matni la seifa. Some put this not on the statement of Rabbi Meir, rather than the statement of the Chachamim. He's believed with regards to the Gidin Asher and the Chelev. They actually changed their mind and said they were no longer trustworthy. Even though Rabbi Yochanan did that, in our time, Rabbi Nachman says they are believed. Gemara says again, Achshure Dare? What do you mean? People are getting more ne'aman, they're becoming better people over time, so now we're going to believe them? Mikara Sabrua Ki Rabbi Yehuda. Originally, they paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore the butchers were believed because it wasn't a big undertaking. Then, hadar sabrua ki Rabbi Meir. Then they changed their mind and said, the halacha is like Rabbi Meir, which is a big undertaking, and therefore they did not believe the butchers anymore. Then, kamadaba dekiri la de Rabbi Yehuda, lo mehemne. As long as the butchers remember the good old days, when we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, they were not believed. Hashto dan shuya de Rabbi Yehuda, mehemne. Now that they totally forgot about Rabbi Yehuda, they are believed. What ended up happening was, there was the original psak, which was like Rabbi Yehuda. Which means to just slice it off and everything's easy. Then they switched the psak and paskin like Rabbi Meir. So any butcher who knew that the old way they did it was just to slice it off. And then now you're making him dig after it. He's going to say that's way too much work. Look at what we did in the old days. And therefore he's not believed. Because first of all, he's not going to do it. And number two is he's convinced that the old way that he used to do it was fine. So then you can't trust the butcher. Once the minhag took hold, then they have to remove everything, and there were no longer any butchers that even remember there was a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, or that was the way they used to do it, at that point they became ne'manim, because then there was only one way to do it. The only way to do it was like Rabbi Meir, and the only way you did it is by scraping it all out. They knew no differently, and they didn't have anything to say, well, we should do it this way, or there's an easier way. There was no other way, just Rabbi Meir's way. Once that happened, they are now once again believable, because they know that that's the minhag, they know that's what you have to do, and they're not saying, why do I have to do this? I could do this. Because there's no other alternative. That's the only thing they know. That's the only thing they grew up with. And therefore, they are believed in that instance. Vala chelev, they're believed with regards to the chelev. Chelev mandikar shmei. Who mentioned chelev? Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah just simply says, and not believed with regards to the Gid and Asher. And again, that's Rabbi Meir, the Shita Do, that requires Katita. Then all of a sudden the Chachamim come along and say, oh, they're believed with regards to the Gid and Asher and the chelev. Who mentioned chelev that they're all of a sudden mentioning chelev? Gid and Asher is part of the topic. Where did chelev come from? Gemara says, Achi Kamar, Ein Yamanim Alav Ala Chelev. Rabbi Meir's statement is really that they're not believed with regards to the Gid and Asher and the chelev. And the Chachamim are responding to that and saying, Chachamim Amim, Nemanim Alav, Vala Chelev. They are believed with regards to it and the Chelev. Alright, next Mishnah. Sholeach Adam Yerech Loved Kochavim. Person's allowed to send a thigh to Novi Kochavim, Shigirin Hashem B'tocha. Even when the sciatic nerve is still in it, Ibnei Shemekomo Nikar. Because it's obvious that it's there. The problem we're thinking of is Ibnei Iver Lotiten Mikshol. Now for the Goy, there's no problem of eating the sciatic nerve. He's not governed by that. Bnei Noach are not chayavim, at least after Matan Torah, with regards to Gid and Asher. So for you to sell him the hip with the Gid and Asher in it, it's no problem. Our fear is that the Goy is going to go and turn around and sell it to a Jew. And the Jew is going to know that it was sourced from another Jew originally. And he's going to think that the Jew took care of it and took out the sciatic nerve. So you're afraid of Bnei Iver Lo Titen Mikshol. Here we do not worry about it because it's obvious when the sciatic nerve was taken out. We already discussed this about bringing it to the Mizbeach. When do you take out the Gid and Asher when you bring it to the Mizbeach? So we said you can't take it out before because it rips the whole leg apart and it's not presentable when you bring it up to the Mizbeach. So it's obvious when you cut out the sciatic nerve. So if he sees the whole leg or hind leg there, then it's going to be clear to him that there is the sciatic nerve in there. He knows he has to take it out. So since it's so obvious, that's why we allow you to sell it in that form and not take care of it. The question obviously in the Mishnah, which the Gemara will discuss, is how are you buying basar from a goy, meaning that it's going through the hands of a non-Jew in the interim? How is it that the second Jew is buying it and knows that it's kasher or can rely on the fact that it is kasher? Once you get over that hump, then the first Jew who sold it is not problematic because it's obvious that the Gid and Asher is still inside of this hind leg. Okay, we'll stop here by the Gemara on the bottom of Tzadik Gimel Amud Bet.